Hey, welcome everyone to another episode of the Going VC podcast. I'm JJ.
And I'm Asad, and we're super excited to bring you all this episode. As a quick reminder, our goal for this podcast, as always, is to discuss a variety of topics, and it's related to launching or accelerating your VC career. So JJ, give us a quick rundown of what the listeners can expect today.
So our guest today is Brett Martin, a founding partner at Charge Ventures. And in today's episode, we discuss Brett's VC career origin story, what motivated him to found a fund, and what his day-to-day life is like as an emerging manager.
Yeah, this was definitely a fun episode. With that, let's get started.
Coming on the podcast today. So we normally start all these episodes out with a quick question talking about the guest's career origin story. So at least in the sort of 25, 30 or so episodes we've recorded, just about everyone has had a different pathway into venture, which I think is one of the things that makes it an exciting career to talk about. And only one of them has been on-campus recruiting. So would love it if you could just start by giving the listeners sort of quick backgrounder on yourself, your firm, and how you ended up in venture.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here. And in terms of how we got to Charge Ventures, this is my firm. I guess it was founded in 2015. So we're, you know, an 8-year mark at our third fund. And how did we get here? Well, I'm from Ocean City, Maryland. It's like a small mid-Atlantic beach town. Went to Dartmouth, did economics and psychology, kind of mindlessly moved down to New York with all my friends and did, 2.5-year, 3-year tour of investment banking. But I kind of always knew I was going to do entrepreneurship. So even when I was at home in Ocean City, I was, selling seashells by the seashore. While I was at Dartmouth, we won the Tuck business plan competition for a in-game advertising network, which that was 2001 and massive, sold to Microsoft for $300 million in 2007. So we probably should have stuck with that idea. And then even, while I was at Dartmouth, my roommate was this good friend of mine, Jordan Cooper, and, he grew up in New York and he was kind of surrounded and he was always talking about this great thing called venture capital. And he was saying, this is what he was going to do. So I got a little early exposure there. And, he now runs Pace Capital in New York with Chris Pike. So, he actually always knew what he was going to do. And I said, well, that sounds really interesting. My path is a little more circuitous. After doing banking, the whole idea was to make money, pay off debts, and then travel the world, which is what I did. I actually lived on a sailboat, a 30-foot sailboat, sailed 6,000 miles from Wiscasset, Maine, down to close to South America and back. Then came back to New York, launched this little website called VBS.TV, which turned out to be eventually grew into Vice Magazine. So launched, took them from 60,000 monthly page views to 2 million by buying traffic off porn websites and then bouncing it back then. People, it was so unsophisticated. People weren't even looking at bounce rates. It's kind of a Wild West time. Then I did a Fulbright in Italy where I was ostensibly studying the effect of globalization on the Italian textile and fashion industries. A thinly veiled ex-banker's attempt to go to, Milan and hang out with beautiful people. I realized that was not the industry I wanted to be in and, sort of realized, okay, tech was where it's at. And I actually pivoted the Fulbright scholarship into a study of 100 CEO founders of publicly traded companies and the venture capitalists that funded them. So that was kind of my pivot into tech and kind of moved from there back to New York, didn't have a job, eventually, tried to do a failed startup one. I think it was really a failure to get off the ground. Came back to New York and actually got a job at an early stage fund called App Fund, which was founded on the premise of starting, basically investing in tablet focused companies. The iPad had just been announced. And that company ultimately turned into an incubator and spun out my first company, which is called Sonar. And so that was around 2000. And been in tech ever since. So, since then, just been working or investing. Right before starting Charge, I was at EIR at Primary Venture Partners, which is one of the premier seed stage funds in New York. And I was about to start another company, but then my Fulbright advisor, just to tie it all full circle, this guy Thanos Papadimitriou, he reached out to me and he said, hey, got this crazy idea. Have a bunch of $1 billion family offices in Europe that are investing kind of willy-nilly off balance sheet in US tech because they know that's where the future is, but they need someone to kind of structure it for them and make it work. And so what I thought was going to be a 6-month consulting project of standing up a family office ultimately got me my first LPs for my first fund. Now is we're on year 8 with 60 plus portfolio companies. So slightly more circuitous path, but aren't they all?
Awesome, awesome. I love that. Yeah, like I was saying, everyone seems to have their own kind of fun, windy path into venture.
Yeah, I mean, it's by hook or by crook, I think.
That's true. Asad, you want to take it away?
Yeah, a bit more curious to learn about your current firm. Tell us more about Charge VC. How did that come about? What inspired you to do it more? And really, where the fund at is now?
Yeah, well, so Charge Ventures, we're a New York-based pre-seed venture capital fund. So premium pre-seed New York-based venture capital. We invest, usually it's somewhere around $250,000 to $750,000 into the first round of financing of a company. So it's, we jokingly say it's friends, families, fools, and Charge Ventures is how you get your first capital. And we focus, pretty software focused. We focus on future of work, crypto. We do a fair amount of B2B healthcare, software healthcare. And, I also teach data science and machine learning at Columbia Business School. And so we do a, fair amount of AI, and we've been, really drilling in on infrastructure for some of these new Gen AI applications. And yeah, that's what we do. The ethos of it is everyone on the Charge team is a founder. So we all have, taken companies from 0 to 1, gotten your first million, 10 million users multiple times. And so that's just really the area we like to work with. We just love getting in with entrepreneurs, founders when it's early and messy and not all figured out.
That's amazing. I mean, when you started, tell me, any challenges that you faced when you started your own fund?
No one knows who you are. No one has ever heard of you. No returns to show LPs. I mean, that's not completely true. I guess one of the benefits for me is that I had already been working in New York tech my entire career. So, my first company, Sonar, we had a few million users. That was back in 2011. So, put that in 2023 terms, I'd be like launching and having 30, 40, 50 million users out the gate. So we had gotten a fair amount of kind of press. We launched a stage at TechCrunch Disrupt. We were at New York Tech Meetup. We got covered. We were, in South by Southwest. So I guess did have the benefit of kind of being relatively known in the New York tech ecosystem. But, trying to explain that to a bunch of, European LPs, really, I think is a testament to my, my partner, Chris Abachi, having really strong relationships. So I think, what we try to do at Charge is combine boots on the ground here, and, really focus on New York, but combine it with a very like high touch, high relationship approach with our investors, because a lot of them are not just looking for returns, they're looking to learn, right? They know the tech is the future and they're trying to get exposure to it. Returns are most important, but they also want to understand, like, how is this going to influence my core business? How can I take some of these learnings and apply them to my core business? So it's not just about returns. It's also about kind of education and plugging our LPs into the ecosystem.
Totally. It's funny you say that because I've spoken with so many people and they always say, I'm starting my fund. And, the thing is, people don't know who I am. I always tell them like, hey, make sure you have a track record ready, or you have something that can show that you're ready to be a VC, for example. Back to you, JJ.
So dig into a little more, and maybe this just sort of relates to the answer you were just giving about knowing that you wanted to do something entrepreneurial, but we'd love to dig into a little more of the decision of finding your own fund, going through all those challenges like you were just discussing versus taking a previous experience and joining an existing one.
After high school, I think I've only worked for someone else for 2 years of my entire life.
Wow.
So
maybe that answers the question right there.
I guess I've just been an entrepreneur so long, I don't really think there's any other option. No one's coming to save me. I think for me, I'm more of a learn by doing kind of get in there guy rather than a apprenticeship kind of mentor path, which is what, venture capital historically is, right? You kind of like climb your way up the ladder, and then, you get to finally do your first deal when you're a principal and you've been working in venture for 5 to 7 years. and you get your couple shots on goal, and then you really hope that those work so that you can maybe move laterally to be a partner somewhere and do a deal or two a year. That just didn't have a lot of appeal to me. I'd rather get out there and do good deals that I'd seen. I mean, honestly, one of my biggest regrets is when I entered New York and New York Tech in the early 2008, 2009, that vintage of entrepreneurs, you know, all of my peers, if I could have just invested $5,000-$10,000 into all of my peers, I would have an amazing angel portfolio. You know, the folks that started around the same time as me, or, you know, it was the guys from Vin from Yipit and Matt Breimer and Brad from, you know, General Assembly, and, you know, the Warby folks and the GroupMe folks. And, you know, I think one thing I would recommend is, in terms of like building a track record, is like just start angel investing. And I think everyone says, oh, well, I don't have a ton of money. I can't do angel investing. And I, you know, honestly, I said the same thing myself. But I think one thing that's big different is that now, you know, you can invest $2,000 on angel list. And if you are truly value add, if you're a seasoned operator, or you've got, you know, great connections, or even if you're just ready to hustle for your founders, you know, they'll take those small checks and they'll be happy that they did. And in return, you know, you can start building a portfolio. So, you know, if you want to build a portfolio of 30 companies, you do it over 5 years, you do 6 investments a year, and you put $5K in each of them, that's only $30K a year. You know, someone, if you're making $150,000, $200,000 a year, which a lot of folks in New York are, you know, you can afford that. So that is probably something I wish I did.
You know what? You're right. A small check does go a long way. And that's how a lot of people are doing it now. I mean, people don't realize, I've spoken to so many people who go, you know, I want to start angel investing, but I know I can't put a $10,000 check each time, but they don't realize that they can go as low as $1,000 for an investment, right? You're totally right. I think that's definitely a strong way for people to start. Now, this actually sparks a question from my side. You know, I would love to dive into your fundraising process. You know, I'd love for our listeners to get a rundown on what that's like, how it differs from when you're doing fundraising for a startup, and really, how do you meet your LPs and what does that overall process look like?
Yeah, I mean, look, the biggest difference between raising money, because I've obviously done a bunch of both, between a fund and a company, is that there's very few forcing functions in raising for a fund, right? When you raise for a company, you have the credible threat of, if you don't invest now, you know, the next time you're going to invest, it's going to be a lot more expensive, right? And you might not be able to even get in. And there's only, it might be competitive space, but even if it's competitive space, I don't know, maybe there's 10 or 20 companies, you know, doing something similar, right? Whereas when you're raising money for a fund, there's no credible threat. Like if they don't want to do this fund, they can probably get on the next fund. Now, obviously, if you become wildly successful, that's not always the case. But for most funds, you know, there will be space in their next fund. You know, they'll be increasing the size of the fund. They'll need more LPs. And, you know, the product, it won't be more expensive and it won't be appreciably different. So that's the biggest challenge. And so you have to really work hard to differentiate yourself, right? Because, you know, at the end of the day, we're all selling money. It's a commodity. Be selling bananas. You know, it's all the same. So you have to really craft your story in a way that displays your unique advantage and competitive advantage. What makes you different? And, you know, why are you going to win deals? Why are you going to win the, you know, hottest, most competitive deals? And that's a process that Lord knows I'm still working on.
Nice. That's good to know. You know, it's now with that, and then my next follow-up would be really, how do you determine your investment thesis strategy? You know, what factors should we take into account? And really, what's that one thing aspiring VCs should know?
Well, if we're going to be, again, super candid, I think that most managers, investment VCs are somewhat emergent in the sense that, you know, you don't really know what you like or what you're good at until you've done 30, 40, 50 investments, right? Like in the beginning, Charge Fund One was basically, can we prove access to high quality entrepreneurs and competitive deals, right? I think that as we've, you know, deployed the second fund and deployed the third fund, you know, we've really zoned in on, okay, we really like software. We don't want to, we just want to focus on bits. Atoms are challenging. you know, we really have zeroed in on these industries I talked about, right? Like future of work, B2B healthcare, crypto, AI. We really, I could list you a long bunch of industries we just don't even look at anymore because we don't have competitive, you know, advantage there. And then, you know, you also have seen, okay, well, I actually did some investments that worked in these spaces. So creator economy, we've had a lot of success. And, you know, success begets more success, right? So if your big winners are in creator economy, you know, you're going to be well better positioned to, you know, invest in, you start to see more and more companies, you get smarter and smarter, and you have a network of people to reference those deals against, right? So in that sense, I think it's people's specialties and theses are somewhat emergent based on their experience. I think now, if you had worked at a big fund for 10 years and then, you know, you really like had to focus on a particular coverage area and then you spin out and you start your own fund, that's, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why LPs will back folks with that profile, right? Is that they've already gone through that process of figuring out their focus and their specialty area. So I guess the advice, which was actually something, you know, Brad Burnham from Union Square told me, and it took me, you know, sometimes it can be a little slow. It took me a whole fun cycle to really figure it out. It was, you know, just focus, specialize, really understand where your edge is going to be and double down on that. So that would be my advice.
So would love to dig a little deeper into something you were just sort of talking about there. One of the things that's sort of come up in these conversations a lot, and, you know, this is sort of a challenge that a lot of people in venture have, is that the feedback cycles are so long. In comparison to probably most other jobs, it's a little more challenging to figure out if you're doing things right. And then it sort of gets compounded, right? If you're going off and doing your own firm versus joining another one and having more of that kind of mentorship experience. So fairly open-ended question here, but we'll have to just kind of riff a little on how you think about keeping track of how you're doing and how you can keep learning.
Well, yeah, that is an issue. One interesting thing I've learned is, and this is just a further your point, is that, okay, so I think the orthodoxy for portfolio management, you know, if you work at a large multi-stage fund, what they do is they basically stack rank their portfolio and take the top basically 25% and put 90% of their energy into those and then pretty much try to ignore the remaining 75%. Because, you know, your winner, it's a power law of where your returns are going to come from. And so you should just put all of your energy into helping your winners. And so that's the venture orthodoxy. I've had a really hard time with that as an entrepreneur. It feels so antithetical to the entrepreneurial sort of mindset, which is like, you know, just keep going and survive. And, you know, for a long time, I've struggled because I was trying to understand how to reconcile my desire to keep helping companies, even when success wasn't obvious, with my need to make returns for my LPs and make money for myself and my family. And what I've ultimately realized is actually which company, you have no freaking idea which companies are going to be your winners in the middle of the process. And what I mean by that is I have seen companies that are absolutely ripping, you know, tens of millions of dollars in ARR, and I've watched them hundreds of millions of dollars in ARR, and I have watched them go to zero. And I have seen companies that have literally gone sideways for 6 years, just one day have the pieces come together in the right configuration and just start ripping and then go out and sell for hundreds of millions of dollars. And so the way that I explained it to my LPs is that, you know, our sort of mentality of never giving up on a company is not just an ethical thing, is, you know, we partner up with these folks, but rather I think it will also can also drive returns because these entrepreneurs that you didn't give up on, you know, if they do figure it out, which does happen, then they're going to remember. And so, you know, I guess to answer your question about feedback cycle is that I don't. Yes, it's a long time before you from when you put your money in to when you get your money out, you know, often. But I think there are so many things to learn along the way, right? Like there are so, if you're paying attention and you're closely involved with your companies and you're trying to help them figure out the problems, like you are still constantly learning and you're still constantly picking up things that you can apply to your next investment. So we took 4 years to deploy Charge 2, which was not a large fund, right? It was, you know, $13 million basically. And, you know, I think a lot of folks in the, you know, 2018 vintage were like literally rushing money out the door and raising bigger funds. And, you know, they certainly made money on that from accumulating assets under management. We're going to see how their returns play out. We always took a sort of slow and steady as she goes approach with the mindset of we're still learning, we're still students of venture capital, and we're only going to get better over time. And so it never felt like a rush to get money out the door. And, you know, we just raised fund 3 and we have the same plan, which is we have a 5-year investment period and we're going to not feel bad about taking the whole damn thing if we need to.
That's totally fair. Sneaking suspicion, that's probably going to serve you guys pretty well versus some of the more frenzied investing that's happening recently.
Well, they have a word for it. They call it time diversity. Apparently, that's a good thing.
Oh, it's funny. I've not actually heard that phrase before.
Yep. So you're not all locked in on a 2021 vintage.
Right. That's funny. Time diversity. So one other question kind of relates to that a little bit, but would love to learn how your experience has been. Let's dig into your sort of day-to-day as a founding GP. Most of our past guests have been on the more junior side. They've had more kind of strictly defined investing roles. And, you know, there was a whole back office team to kind of support them there. But yeah, so again, kind of open-ended question here, but we'll love to riff a little bit on your sort of day-to-day experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of being a founder is knowing which fires to let burn. And so I think VC is a weird job where like it absolutely expands to fill the time allotted. And so, you know, you think your job as a VC is to do deals. So therefore you should just take as many meetings as possible. And certainly when I'm exploring a new space, you know, I think the way I try to get smart, like some people are, you know, they love reading and they're just going to, you know, do research and read all the papers. You know, my way of learning is just talk to as many people as possible in that space and kind of iterate with entrepreneurs so I can sort of calibrate what good looks like. And, you know, after you've heard the same story 20 times, you start to have an idea of, okay, these are the pieces that are unique. These are the pieces that are differentiated. This is what, you know, a good go-to-market looks like or what real technology looks like. And then you can actually start to be more selective about which meetings you take, right? Because you know what you're looking for. So, you know, I think it's like, how quickly can you get to the point where you know what you're looking for? And then, you know, can you actually find it? And then can you get into it and execute? And, but the benefit there is that you actually, by the time you find what you're looking for, you know, you actually can talk to their problem, right? You know what the problems are. You know what is special. You know why Gen AI is actually, you know, potentially useful for this use case and where it's not. And so it depends kind of where I am on executing on any, you know, particular investment thesis, right? Whether I'm taking a ton of meetings or I'm just like precision hunting. And so that kind of, you know, waxes and wanes. I think what you allude to is like, I'm also fundraising. I'm also, you know, releasing wires. I'm also looking at the fund, looking at our fund back office work and doing a bunch of like unglamorous tasks at the same time. Luckily, you know, I've got a partner who's, you know, helping out with those things. So, you know, it's not a solo effort by any means.
You know, I absolutely love how you said a VC needs to know which fires to let burn. That is some solid knowledge. As we come to the end, any closing thoughts, especially for aspiring emerging managers?
I think that you should obviously send all your deal flow over to me. So hit me up, brett@charge.vc. Happy to collaborate. Always like people to co-invest with. But, you know, in practice, like, let's see, what are your thoughts? Don't be afraid to be more out there. Like, I think, you know, the biggest risk in venture capital is to just play it safe. And playing it safe in an industry where the average returns are below zero is not a viable strategy. So, you know, shoot your shot, go big, go hard, get as out there as possible, you know, lean into whatever space you are most excited about and follow that passion. And don't be afraid to concentrate, because hedging strategy is a known losing strategy. You might as well take a shot on an unknown winning one.
That makes sense. Awesome. Well, Brett, as we come towards the end here, one question we ask all our guests is favorite book they've read recently. And it does not need to be tech or venture related.
You're lucky, because I only read fiction. I'm currently reading the Tao Te Ching, you know, Eastern philosophy. And it's a lot about kind of surrender and basically affecting the outcome you want without applying force. Yeah, definitely recommend it. Check it out.
Awesome. Sounds good. We'll definitely check it out, and we'll get that in the show notes as well.
Absolutely. Love it. That's perfect. That is absolutely perfect. Brett, thank you so much for joining us for our Going VC podcast. JJ and I, we're super happy to host you.
Absolute pleasure being here. Thank you so much for having me, and looking forward to checking out the next show.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe to our newsletter for more venture capital research by visiting goingvc.com. And consider giving us a gift by rating us and sharing the podcast with a friend. Until next time, stay safe and stay healthy.